sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series. And maybe sooner than we think.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play.
What's going on, Cubs fans? You're listening to Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. I'm one of your hosts, John Sears, and joining me on the other end is Ryan Davis. We're here covering another episode of Locked On Cubs. I believe this is episode 169, so we're getting close to 200.
That's Ryan, nice.
How's it going, man? How's your week been so far?
Pretty good. Can't complain. It's been very cold, so I guess I could complain about that. But my daughter's been home like a whole bunch of days this week, and she's back at school today, so I'm like actually really happy about that. I actually can like focus and clean up the house and get stuff done.
That's kind of how I felt yesterday a little bit. For those of you who are not aware, it has been close to negative 50 degrees of the wind chill in Chicago. Hopefully everyone that's around the Chicagoland area is staying warm. I know I did not go to work on Wednesday because I didn't trust public transit being heated by literal fire to work. So I decided I'd rather just stay in my house. So not a whole lot's been going on, as I'm sure you guys can imagine, but we've got some stuff to talk about on today's episode. Bryce Harper rumors are back again, as reports came out this week that the star has planned on meeting with the Padres and maybe has already started doing some secondary meetings with teams, which has led people to believe the Cubs could be potentially another team that Harper has met, and one of the teams that John Morosi of MLB Network implied as on the peripherals for Bryce Harper. You can't see them, but I'm doing air quotes. Later, Ryan talked with a former Cub pitcher and MLB pitcher Michael Bui about his fight with his disability issues that he's been struggling with the MLBPA. During his career in the MLB, he suffered some life-threatening injuries that essentially the MLB has turned kind of a blind eye to, in a sense. Ryan talked with Bowie. We'll be able to kind of talk about this whole issue, so it kind of ties into not only an issue that we should be talking about, but also an issue that kind of relates to today's current MLB situation with the players union, as well as just the ownership and whatnot. So we'll talk about that. And then finally, we'll wrap the show just hitting on some regular MLB headlines and some Cubs bulls before we end for the week. So before we get started, though, today's sponsor is, of course, Arizona's Office of Tourism. Spring training is only 2 weeks away. This spring, follow your favorite baseball teams to Arizona for Cactus League spring training. Amazing weather and landscapes, exciting outdoor adventure, incredible food. Arizona is the perfect home base for your baseball fans. 10 stadiums, 15 MLB teams, 75 degree temperatures, all 10 stadiums in the greater area of Phoenix within 50 miles. Family-friendly resorts, hotels offer plenty of fun for all kids of all ages. From water parks to horseback riding to games and activities, plan your spring training getaway right now at visitarizona.com/springtraining. Once again, that's visitarizona.com/springtraining. So let's jump into this first segment. Of course, Bryce Harper rumors. They're out there, Ryan. Cubs fans want to believe that Bryce Harper's come to the Cubs. Let's crush their dreams now so we can actually talk about this. It's not going to happen, right?
Yeah, I went on the radio last night with Julie DeCaro on 670 The Score, and we talked about this exact same thing.
Sure.
No, it's not going to happen. Like,
I
just can't. I can't see any possible way that they can make this work out. Yeah, obviously, everyone wants to assume they're the team on the peripherals. I think they probably are. Because they have basically asked Bryce Harper to at least come back to them, or Scott Boras to come back to them before he accepts an offer, to see if maybe they can do something.
Right.
I think Theo Epstein's holding out hope that in the 11th hour he'll be able to pull off a miracle deal, sending Jason Hayward and Tyler Chatwood somewhere. And maybe it's possible. Maybe he has that deal agreed to with somebody and just doesn't want to do it unless he's absolutely positive he is going to be able to sign Bryce Harper. Like maybe he has that deal on the table somewhere and you know, has to have that handshake agreement with Harper first. Like, maybe that's what it is. And that's your, like, silver lining of your sliver of hope, I guess. Outside of that, if anybody thinks that Theo Epstein's holding out hope that Tom Ricketts will come in at the last minute and say, okay, go ahead and spend my money, no. I can tell you definitely for sure that is not going to happen.
Yeah. Who's your source, Ryan?
Use your imagination, but I'd say it's pretty close to it's very close to the people on that one.
Just to give you guys a quick little background here on what's happened here on the 31st. So on Thursday, Ken Rosenthal tweeted that Padre officials planned on meeting with Bryce Harper either the 31st or today, February 1st. To talk to him in Las Vegas, just kind of make one of their final pitches. It's been confirmed now there are legitimately four teams that are known to be in on Bryce Harper, being the Nationals, the Phillies, the White Sox, surprise, surprise, and now the Padres. So those four teams actively involved. And then, as I mentioned earlier in the show, Morosi mentioned at least one other team remains on the periphery. With such a weird way to explain that. Overwhelming likelihood is he will sign with one of those four clubs, is what Morosi says. I mean, take that with a grain of salt. It really doesn't mean much, honestly. It's probably safe to assume those four teams are likely the most involved. But with the way this shakes out, and if Bryce Harper's asking price continues to drop, a lot of teams, I'm sure, are likely to jump back in here. But it is worthy to point out, at least right now, that a lot of two were probably the bigger suitors in Bryce Harper, at least we thought coming into the offseason, were the Yankees and Dodgers. With how much money they've spent to already upgrade their roster, you know, AJ Pollock's now Dodger. The Yankees have added Troy Tulowitzki, you know, DJ LeMahieu, a couple different places. They've got Didi Gregorius coming back at some point this year. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense right now for either one of these teams to add Bryce Harper, because they would just fly over the luxury tax at this point.
Right.
So, I mean, that there is some potential to kind of figure out who would actively be that team in the periphery, as they keep explaining it as. It wouldn't make sense that it would be the Cubs in some type of facility, but I mean, like you said, it's very unlikely. It's going to take a major discount. The Cubs are kind of hoping for what happened last year with Yu Darvish. Not necessarily a similar situation, but or the exact same situation, but similarities, obviously.
Right. And if you remember who the teams were that were in on Darvish at the end, it was the Cubs, the Brewers, and the Twins. And the Cubs basically just knew that they, you know, all they had to do was outbid those two teams, or even just kind of match what those teams were able to offer, and they were going to land Darvish. It's not the same situation. They do have some, you know, the Phillies are an attractive destination for free agents. The San Diego Padres, who wouldn't want to, you know, spend their time in San Diego? I mean, I guess if winning a championship isn't the most important thing to you, then hey, like I'd sign a 10-year deal to go live in San Diego for a while. So, like, you know, with Harper, the Padres are the team that I find the most interesting. And maybe that's just for Harper and Machado. I said on The Score last night, and I'm going to stand by this, I think the Padres end up with one of those two players. I really do.
It's got the money for it. And yeah. I've heard, you know, you can drink up San Diego all you want, because it goes down real smooth. I just recently watched Anchorman. We'll work that in better.
What does San Diego mean again? Never mind.
Yeah. I've heard scholars maintain that they lost the translation a long time ago.
Well,
I don't think anyone knows. Yeah. I don't understand that. sorry. And then on top of all this, to add just a level of stupid fandom linking things together, that falls in line with the same thing as like Bryce Harper naming his dog Wrigley and him just randomly wearing a Bulls hat, meaning he's coming to Chicago. Theo Epstein's wife put like a kind of ambiguous quote out on Instagram saying, in a world where everyone is overexposed, the coolest thing you can do is maintain your mystery, which seems like just a straight like copy from Tumblr type of thing.
Right.
But she did leave a caption that just said, I'm just going to leave this here. And so, like, every Cubs fan is like, oh, that means Bryce Harper's to the Cubs. That means Theo Epstein's working undercover to sign Bryce Harper. It's just like, what? How could...
Who knows?
I can see why. And it's just so dumb that, like, we have to, like, acknowledge that this wasn't part of the story. But, like, it is. And people are talking about it. When it comes down to it, like, we... The Cubs are going to make an offer, I'm sure. They'll go to Scott Boras when it looks like it's that final hour, and they're like, all right, well, if that's the deal we have to meet, this is what we can offer. Here's what we have, blah, blah, blah. Kind of one whole encompassing pitch just to kind of be able to say they gave it their best shot, and likely Bryce Harper will sign with one of these four teams that likely pays the most money. My guess would be the Phillies. So
yeah, I guess for Harper, I'll guess the Phillies, and then I'll put Machado on the Padres. But the White Sox miss out because they didn't want to pay more money for a generational talent when they have basically nothing committed to the payroll. So good for them for White Soxing it up. And yeah. Then I wrote something else for Forbes. I did a lot of writing this week. If you don't follow me on Twitter, if you do, you caught that, I'm sure. The Cardinals, why are they not in on Manny Machado?
You know, good point.
Just look at their entire situation. I wasn't all that familiar with their payroll situation, but they're projected right now, and it seems like they've kind of ended on the off season. Like they don't seem like they're spending a lot more money. At least, you know, they feel like maybe they like their roster. They're projected for about $160 million next year. So they're really far away from the luxury tax line of 206.
Yeah, what are they doing? Are they? I mean, it's not like they have anyone like impending that they're going to have to pay a ton of money right now. You know what I mean? Like, well, Carlos Martinez in a couple years, but that's like it, really.
He's on an extension at least for a few more years. But they've got Paul Goldschmidt, obviously, who is a free agent at the end of this year. Marcelo Zuna is a free agent at the end of this year. So I mean, those guys are guys that you probably want to pay, or at least pay one of them. Matt Carpenter is done in 2 years, and I don't think you probably want to keep him around after that because he's already 33 years old. You can't imagine he's going to be getting much better, and he's already, you know, if you have got Goldschmidt at first base, Carpenter's not a good third baseman, so he's probably, you know, 2 years from now not bringing you much value. So that's a guy you let go of. So you've got a spot open at third base. You know, right now you've got Paul DeJong at shortstop, who is a decent bat. A solid defender. You probably could just move him over to second base. Suddenly at second base, DeJong is probably one of the top 10 offensive second basemen in the league, and I think overall probably a top 10 second baseman in the league, because he's, you know, he has a solid range and an okay throwing arm. Then you just, you know, fire Colton Wong into the sun and put Manny Machado at short. He's 26 years old, and you know, mm-hmm. the Cardinals have some decent prospects, but it's mostly on the pitching side. And some of them have already graduated to the big leagues. They have some good positional talent in their minors, but those guys are like 2-3 years away, and they're in the low minors. So you don't have this, like, you know, next big hitter coming up. You've got, mm-hmm. you know, Yachty and Carpenter and Dexter Fowler and Goldschmidt. These guys are all, you know, 31 and over. In Yachty's case, he's 36. So, I mean, you've got some of your positional guys who are on the older side, or, you know, probably either retiring or leaving soon, like Carpenter. You've got to add something if you're the Cardinals. And this just seems like a perfect situation to bring in a guy who's really great and, you know, basically would not only make them probably the favorite in the NL Central in 2019, but a contender for the NL Central for at least the next several years, you know, with that rotation and a few of the other young players. So, you know, from my point of view, that's the team that makes the most sense for Manny Machado if they wanted to actually put the money out there. It's just, it seems like they just don't, you know, they feel like maybe their team is good enough.
Yeah.
Which is a big mistake. Kind of, in baseball, exactly. It's a big mistake to always just think your team is good enough.
Well, and, you know, it's funny you talk about that because that's kind of how the Cubs are sitting right now, too. Right. yeah. But, I mean, at least in the Cubs, like, defense, you can look at their roster and be like, yeah, this is a 95-plus win team. You could see that happening again, whereas the Cardinals, like, you could see them winning 90-plus games, but with the state of their roster right now, they don't have a whole lot of guys outside of maybe Dexter Fowler signed long-term that are, you know, you would assume would be in the core, I guess. So,
yeah,
it doesn't make any sense why they're not pushing for it, but they must be really sold on Colton Wong as, you know, a gold glove second baseman or something, right?
He's a really good defensive second baseman, but he's extremely inconsistent offensively. He's been in the big league since 2013, which I think would probably surprise a lot of people. He's mm-hmm. 2 years older than Manny Machado. So, yeah. So if you think that, you know, you're going to pass on 26-year-old Machado, who's already a bona fide superstar, because you think Colton Wong's going to break out at some point, you know, he's already, what, like 6 years into the league, and he's, I think his career OPS I put in the story is like 92. So, and it wasn't like it was like he's trending upward. He was not that good offensively last year. So that's a team that I think could be dominating the NL Central for years based on that rotation and a few of the young players, if they went out and got a guy like Machado. Because I like Paul DeJong. I like his bat. I don't love it. I don't love him at shortstop long term. But I think if you moved him to second base for a guy like Machado, that would be a really good defensive, or at least a solid defensive middle infield and a really good offensive middle infield. And then you've got Harrison Bader, who I'm a big fan of, who may be one of the, if not one of the best defensive center fielders in the game. He probably is like top five, you know, like he's
already,
yeah, he's already that good defensively, and he's a modest offensive bat, but he's still young and developing. So that's a guy who may not be a superstar, but Cubs fans are going to hate him for years, I think. So
yeah,
the Cardinals have a couple players, but they need that next piece to make that like long-term push. And I think they're blowing their chance by not getting involved on Machado.
It just seems like they haven't been able to find that guy to replace Albert Pujols. And even though they won the World Series without him afterwards, or went to the World Series without him. No, they won one, didn't they? They won a World Series without Pujols.
No, Pujols was, that was his last year in 2011.
Okay, that's right. Yeah. And then they went to the World Series, lost to the Red Sox.
Yeah, 2 years later, they went without him, but lost.
And they lost on the infield fly rule or whatever, right? Didn't they? Or lost one of those games, I believe, on the infield fly.
I don't remember. They beat the Braves in that wild card game in 2012, the year after Pujols left. They beat the Braves because, in large part, because of that weird infield fly rule, where it was actually like in the out, like well into the outfield.
That's right. And then it was 2013 when they lost to the Red Sox, and
there was a game that they won because of interference, right?
Yes, yeah, at
third base, right? Where Alan Craig ran like way out of the baseline and ran into the third baseman, and they got the interference call. And then the next game, I think, they lost with Colton Wong getting picked off at first base.
Okay, you're right.
That was a crazy World Series. And
that was.
And you know who the big superstar of that World Series was for the Red Sox? Other than David Ortiz, who I think won the MVP, but John Lester.
That's right. John Lester. That was like the year John Lester became the bona fide star.
Yeah, like because he ate the Cardinals alive in I think two games in the World Series, and people were talking about like stuff on his glove or on his hat. And
yeah.
Yeah. Cardinals fans don't like John Lester.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. They can deal. before we jump to the second segment, I want to get your thoughts on this quickly. David Haw put out an article, and I'm not a big fan of David Haw. Whatever, irrelevant. He wrote a story basically about kind of implying that the way that free agency is going right now could eventually help the Cubs maybe keep Chris Bryant in 2021 when he does become a free agent. I don't necessarily know. I think a lot is going to change from now till then. At least I hope so. Talks are going to be getting to the point where, I mean, players union stuff and everything is going to be decided roughly around there, maybe before, after. I'm not sure what the timeline is, but decisions will be coming. Players will probably be more adamant to strike if things are still staying, you know, as the status quo for the moment. Do you see this impacting at all Chris Bryant's decision to become a free agent?
Well, I do believe that he becomes a free agent after the next collective bargaining agreement is done. So
that's what I thought too. Yeah. So that kind of
2022, I mean, and it's up after 2021, I think. Or no, it's up after 2020. Yeah, I think we're 2 years in. We have two more seasons. So yeah, 2021 will be the first year of the new agreement, I believe.
Exactly. So it could be, this entire article could be moot at that point. Obviously, right. Speaking,
we just don't know
plus
what's
going to
happen.
Fans,
yeah. Honestly, I think this conversation, because to answer the question, I'd really get into the inner workings of what's going on with the MLBPA. I think that probably fits into our second segment. So I'm going to save some of my thoughts and I'll add that in when we talk about the MLBPA and what's going on with them, I think.
All right. Let's take a break here. We'll slide into the second segment shortly after this as we discuss Michael Bowie and kind of his battle with the MLB Players Union here on Locked On Cubs. Welcome back to Locked On Cubs. If you guys have a smart speaker or Apple, go ahead and tell your smartphone or speaker to play Locked On Cubs and get all our latest content. If you do have an iPhone or an Apple product, you can say play Locked On Cubs or say Siri, please play Locked On Cubs, and it'll play it on the podcast device as it literally tries to play it on my phone right now. I should have thought about that. But you almost heard it. I caught it before. You can tell Siri to play Locked On Cubs and it'll play your podcast for you. If you do have a smart speaker or whatnot, so check that feature out if you do. But let's get to more baseball talk. Here in this second segment, Ryan was lucky enough to sit down with Micah Bowie, who believes in headline here from the Forbes article, former pitcher Micah Bowie believes MLB PA leadership needs to do better for former players. Kind of diving into the background of what's been going on with Bowie since he's kind of left the MLB and the treatments he's been under. Ryan, why don't you go ahead and kind of describe the timeline that Bowie's kind of like been dealing with the physical side of So Ryan was lucky enough to sit down with former pitcher who did play for the Cubs, Micah Bowie, who's been having a really tough time with MLB Players Union, their leadership, basically not helping him through some of the health issues that he suffered simply from just playing baseball. Ryan, you were lucky enough to talk with him. What exactly is the situation for fans that aren't familiar with it?
Yeah, and fans of, I don't want to say of a certain age, but who are fans in the 90s may remember him. He started 11 games with the Cubs. They acquired him from the Braves, I think midseason 99, in the deal that sent Jose Hernandez and Terry Mulholland to Atlanta. He was one of the players they got back. He was a 24-year-old just making his first stint in the big leagues at that time. Started 11 games, pitched 47 innings, had a 9.96 ERA. So there's a chance you do remember that. Interestingly enough, he told me that the reason he was so bad that year is because he basically needed Tommy John surgery. And the Cubs were like, no, go out there and pitch. Which is, wow. We talked extensively about how the game has changed in that way. That, you know, it sounded like maybe there were people trying to save their jobs at that time and just needed pitchers to eat innings. And now it's so different in the way they treat players in regards to injuries. And I think that's a perfect lead into what's going on with him. He had an injury riddled career. Not a lot to speak of, kind of a journeyman. The way I kind of called it when Sean and I were talking before the show was he was kind of like a poor man's Mike Montgomery, who, you know, he was a lefty swingman. In his best years, he was with the Washington Nationals, I think. In 2 years with them, maybe pitched like 70 some innings total and had like a 3.74 ERA. So a decent lefty who could start for you, come out of the pen, but injuries really just kind of shut down his career. He retired in 2008. He had dealt with back problems all throughout his career, and it just kept getting progressively worse. And to shorten it a little bit, the doctors, because they wanted to keep him able to move and do things, they did a spinal stimulator treatment where they put like a battery in his body and all kinds of stuff that, you know, I don't have to go into all the details, but essentially the battery moved, it was placed wrong and it moved up in his rib cage and fried his lungs. And so now he's on oxygen. He has like 8% use of his lungs, all because of the back injuries that he occurred pitching with the Braves in the minors and then, you know, kind of felt throughout his career. And so he is, you know, didn't make a ton of money as a player. It did okay, but now he can't work. So he had applied for disability through Major League Baseball, which he said would pay him $60,000 a year to help, you know, which would cover essentially his medical bills, which are costing him $30,000 out of pocket, and then would leave, you know, enough left over that, you know, the fact that he can't work, maybe he could put some food on the table for his family because he has a wife and two kids. So it's not like he's looking to get rich. He's looking to stay alive and pay his bills and for these injuries that, you know, he alleges were because of pitching in baseball. And baseball came back and said, or I'm sorry, the players union came back and denied his disability claim and said, you're 20 days short of the service time to get disability. And so he appealed, sent over like 2,000 pages of information. Basically, the crux of his appeal was, if it weren't for these back injuries that I later had to have, you know, have this these procedures done on, if it weren't for the back injuries, I probably would have made those last 20 days. So maybe kind of help me out here. And according to him, he was told after the appeal was denied that the MLBPA sent it to the appeal board and whoever's on it. And the lawyers told him, you don't even really need to consider this. You can just deny it. And that his appeal never got even really looked at. I think MLBPA is saying that's not true. But that's what he says he was told. And, you know, so that's the story that I put out there, is that he alleges that that's what happened. And so basically the whole thing is, you know, he's learned in his retirement that it's not just him. There are others that are retired players who have not been treated so well by the MLBPA, and that retired players are just kind of, you know, brushed under the rug. He talks about guys who came even before him that, you know, barely made any money when they played, you know, playing the 60s and 70s. And then finally, you know, the union battled and got them pensions. But, you know, when those, you know, they're getting pensions when they're already fairly old. And then when those players are dying off, the pensions aren't transferring to their widows. So he was saying he knows of guys who, you know, they died and their widows lost their homes because they didn't get the pensions. So it's a really sad, tragic story. And I'm glad that he wanted to speak out about it. Yeah, I put it together for Forbes. So, you know, if you follow me on Twitter at Ryan Q Davis and you're interested, you can go read the story. It's my pinned tweet. It's really sad. There's also a link in there that takes you to an organization that is helping him, and that's the American Association of, or it's the Association of Professional Athletes, or Professional Baseball Players of America. Wow, if I could. if I could say that correctly, but there's a link at the bottom of the story that if you wanted to help, you can click the link. It takes you right to a donation page, and you could just leave a comment and say, I'd like this money to go to Micah Bowie. So there are people helping. It's just that he says union leadership haven't even reached out to him about this, even outside of the denial of disability. Nobody in the leadership has reached out to see if there's any other way they can help, even raising awareness or anything like that. And so it's really just sad. He's very pro-union. He was very involved in the union. He talks about all the involvement he had, even as a player who was only in the big leagues, you know, for a short time. But he says the union's great. He just wants to get awareness out there for the current players to try and maybe make change so that they don't end up in situations like his. And his is an extreme case, but you know, he doesn't want players going forward to ignore stuff like this with their union and allow things like this to continue to happen to other players down the road.
Right. And honestly, just from personal experiences, I've seen both my parents at one point had to be on disability just because my dad was a plumber. My mom has had knee replacement surgery, all sorts of stuff. At a certain point, it is tough to get not only like disability, Social Security is really hard to claim to when you're that young. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's 44 years old. It's different for baseball players, obviously, because, you know, retirement happens somewhere between 30 and 40 years old most times for those players. So it is a different beast here. But I know my dad was going through disability when he was like 51, 52, and they fought him for about 3 years, and he was a plumber who obviously worked with his, you know, hands, legs, all sorts of stuff. It's a tough situation for anyone, but for someone's a baseball player, you would think the players should be doing a little bit more to help his case.
Yeah. And my uncle was a disability educator, you know, in the state of Illinois. He worked for a federal program, but, and he would talk about how you get so many claims and some of them aren't all that legitimate and you deny them, or maybe they're actually injured, but they're not disability injured. But then he said there are other people who you feel like, you know, probably can't work, or, you know, maybe they have certain skills, but, you know, like let's say my only skill was I was a writer and then I broke, you know, a hand or I lost a hand in an accident. Well, I wouldn't be eligible for disability because, you know, I could theoretically do other jobs, but maybe I'm not qualified for them, like jobs that don't involve typing. So, you know, like, so he said it's heartbreaking how many people, you know, are seriously hurt and can't do the jobs they used to do anymore and are heartbroken to have to be on disability or apply for disability, and then he has to deny them. And, you know, it's just a sad, the story overall is sad. And we talked about how this kind of leads into what's going on with, you know, the players currently and some of the problems they're having, with the current collective bargaining agreement, which has created this scenario where the owners are, I don't want to call it collusion, but it's effective collusion, where they've set the table so that the luxury tax kind of holds back the market for free agents, and so you don't have 10 to 15 teams looking to sign Manny Machado. You have less teams in the market for these players, and so it brings the salaries down artificially.
There's a systemic problem across the board with not only the players union, but what's going on in MLB and players getting paid. We see it a lot now. We hear more about the NFL talking about it more and more recently, just because more and more people have come up with CTE and some type of brain trauma and things like that from hits or whatnot. So we hear people talk about it, but there's severe long stemming injuries from all sports. I mean, when you play a sport like this professionally, you're bound to come away with arthritis, things that are going to happen to you no matter what, because you're playing a professional sport that requires you to put X amount of physical effort in every year for, you know, even if you've been a kid playing baseball for your entire life since you were probably five, your body's going to break down. It's not meant to be used quite like this. And it's disappointing to see these, these sports organizations just completely, maybe not abandon players necessarily, but kind of turn a blind eye to the whole situation. And it's disappointing to see people that are, championed and thrown on every t-shirt and jersey and, pennants with their name on it and card plaques that are sold even at minor league games for guys. Like, it's crazy. You can go to a King County Cougars game and still get like an Aramis Ramirez, like framed a card thing, those still exist. And it's crazy that these players, they can champion one way, but then when it comes to the time they really need it, it's interesting to see how much they forget.
And I mean, he's a guy who obviously didn't have a big, long big league career, but remember that, players that are alive that played the game and are retired that, were members of the MLBPA, we're not talking tens of thousands of guys here. Mm-hmm. It's not a lot of people. There should be, even for guys who have the lesser service time, there should be ways that they can, somewhat help these people and take care of them. And, he was a member of the 2002 Oakland A's, which is one of my favorite baseball teams of all time.
They're awesome.
Everyone loves the Billy Beane Moneyball A's. Mm-hmm. And so he said that, for years after that, he still would get invited to Oakland to do events and meet the 2002 A's, probably one of the most popular teams that didn't even win a playoff series.
Yeah.
but like he said, like the Oakland A's even have reached out and are like, how can we raise awareness? How can we help? What can we do for you and your family? He only pitched like 20 innings total for that team.
That's crazy.
And he made like one playoff appearance with them. It was the only playoff appearance, which is actually pretty cool. He faced four batters and struck out three of them. But but like,
good for Michael.
Yeah, and he's just like, he's dismayed by the whole process of everything that's gone on with the leadership in the MLBPA. And he even talked about the current stuff and said how unfortunate it is to see. I think the quote that he said about that I think is the most telling about what those guys are going through, the current MLBPA, is the group of guys we had leading the union when I was playing, they were doing an incredible job because to me, they were the smartest guys in the room when it comes to business, and they knew what to bargain for to help the game be successful so the players could get paid more. That's the way I always felt about them. I don't know if that's the case now.
Yeah, I could see why he would feel that way. to put it, I guess summarize the whole thing. Looking up how much Bowie made, I said his name wrong.
Bowie. Yep. Bowie. That's okay. It looks like Bowie. It's Bowie.
Looking up how much Bowie made in his like four seasons, I guess, in the MLB, he made just a hair under $1.6 million, obviously. And that was 2008, and that was over from 99 to 2008. I can't imagine most of that money is still around, obviously. I mean, you can score away as much as you can, but, it's $1.6 million is a lot of money. But,
that's over the course of 10 years.
Exactly.
Obviously, that's, an average of $160,000 a year, which is a lot of money. But then you have agent fees, you have taxes, mm-hmm. you have a lot of other stuff that goes into. I think he purchased and ran a baseball academy and is in his retirement, so probably a lot of the money went into that, but that's something he had to give up because he can't do it anymore. So
just sad.
Yeah.
Well, I'll make sure to link the story as well as the link to where you guys can donate money to Micah's cause. I would encourage you look at some of the other things that are going on with MLBPA, because I think it's going to be obviously a massive talking point, not only with just free agency, but when you talk about, you know, how players are being handled and taken care of after the game. I think that'll obviously be a conversation to talk about. The thing I worry about is a lot of the MLB player union, like people that are involved from like team, I guess they're appointed team officials that are on, you know, like Chris Bryant is the Cubs guy. A lot of these guys that are taking steps into this are younger. I would assume, obviously, they're talking with all these players and that are in the union. They want to know what the main issues are. I would be interested to see how serious of an issue this is compared to what some of the players are worried about more, which would be, you know, them getting paid the appropriate amount in free agency. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, it's going to be, the union stuff is going to be a large talking point over the next couple of years, which, you know, I enjoy because that's my education background. Sure. So I love, you know, the labor union stuff, but it's just, you know, I'm a union side labor guy, and it's not looking good for them right now. Even if they're probably going to strike, and with the owners having squirreled away so much money, I feel like this is the first time in baseball history where a strike is going to go poorly, like really poorly for the players, and the owners are just going to wait them out because the owners have reached a point where they obviously don't care about public perception.
Right. $10.6 billion in revenue last year.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. I think the owners will be just okay for a season or two without baseball.
Right. Yeah, they could literally wait it out 2 years.
Yeah. And
they probably wouldn't care all that much if they got a much more generous CBA.
Right. Right. So
that's a dire note. Let's move to the third segment.
Yeah, let's jump to the third and final segment, but hopefully have some more positive news. But like I said, check out the links here. I'm going to link Ryan's story as well as the link to help out Micah if you guys are interested in doing so. Obviously, we encourage it, but it's not, you know, necessary. Anything you guys feel like you can contribute, that would be great. But beyond that, let's go to the third and final segment. We'll touch on some quick Cubs news and hit the MLB headlines before we jump into this weekend on Lockdown Cubs. Welcome back to Lockdown Cubs here for the third and final segment. We're going to go kind of quick here, this last segment, just kind of jump around a little bit. To start here, Jordan Bastian did a little bit of a sit down with Wilson Contreras, who is saying that he is primed for a comeback season. The entire article kind of screams of spring training, you know, best shape ever type of like talk here a little bit. But Contreras, I think, interestingly, he has a good mindset on 2018. He talked about basically when he was getting asked about it at a Cubs convention, he said, you know, we're in 2019. I'm looking forward to having a great season. I don't think about last year. I don't really think about it at all because I think it wasn't a bad year, but it was an experience year. I learned from it, and that's why I'm not thinking about it last year. He's 26 years old, obviously. Contreras is entering close to the prime of his career. He's been a relatively impressive catcher pretty much since he got called up. Obviously, he homered in his first game, so everyone loved Willie from the start. But he brings just a level of, I think, edge that Theo Epstein's been talking about. Having a healthy Contreras this year is huge. I just think the way he's going about 2019 seems like at least, you know, he's taking 2018, not necessarily ignoring it, but, you know, acknowledging that, you know, the final 2 months of his season, you know, along with the entire Cubs offense, they just stopped hitting.
Yeah. And what I take from what he said is, I think what he's saying is he knows he's talented enough to do it, but I think he found out a lot about exhaustion and playing that position every day. I think that's what he really discovered in 2018, was how his body reacts to, you know, being out there so frequently. Obviously, they had that stretch where they had to show up to the ballpark 42 times in 43 days. So he's
catching like almost all those games.
Yeah, he's catching a lot of them because they didn't have a veteran backup catcher. All they had was Victor Caratini, which I think at this point in the season or in the off season, you know, if guys like Harper and Machado are off the table, and you're not going to sign Craig Kimbrel, the main thing that I'd like to see them add is a real backup catcher. Maybe a guy who's good at pitch framing can catch, you know, 30 games for you, and maybe you move Victor Caratini, who still is a reasonable prospect and has some value. Maybe you package him with somebody else and you know, get something else that could be useful, such as a reliever. So yeah, that story, that's all, that's what I take away from it, is Victor, or, I'm sorry, not Victor Caratini, Wilson Contreras knows he's talented enough. He just has to prepare for the workload in a different way. And I think that's what he learned, and that's why he's moving forward in that way.
Yeah, that's a great point too. The huge part of it was just how overworked the guy was. And obviously when you have Victor Caratini as your backup, who offensively has potential, defensively isn't terrible, but it just doesn't look at framer, doesn't necessarily block the plate as well as you might like. Of course, Wilson had his own struggles with that too. So, I mean, you know, it you could have a better situation there for catch up behind Contreras. So hopefully the Cubs address that. Another article came out that I think you guys should check out would be an interesting article from Sahado Sharma talking about Nico Horner and how when he was drafted, a lot of like people around the league were kind of skeptical. One scout even said something along the lines of it was a reach. But you should check that out. It is under The Athletic, so it is, there's a paywall. So if you don't have a subscription, unfortunately, you might not be able to read this. But if you do, you should check it out. It's a great story, kind of diving into Horner's kind of experiences in the Arizona Fall League, going into, you know, even further back to when he first got drafted and then brought into the developmental leagues and bounced around to high A. He only got to play so many games with the Cubs itself, but people kind of diving into, you know, what he was like as a minor, going to see him before he got drafted. It's a really good story about Horner and his development, from kind of showing that he's not just a guy with a good glove, but he had plenty of pop in his bat. And kind of points towards why Horner is popping up in so many prospect lists, something we might get to later. But what did you kind of take from the whole Horner article?
Yeah, I mean, Sahadov is, I'll say he's a great Cubs writer and one of my top three Cubs beat writers to have a beer with. it's a good read. Check it out. I like Nico Horner as a player. He's probably never going to be more than like a 10 to 15 homer guy, but he's going to make contact. He's going to be a really good defensive second baseman, I think. He's going to eventually have to move to second base, I would think.
I think so, too.
If you're projecting long-term, Javier Baez is the better shortstop, and Nico's your second baseman. But this is a guy that I think, you know, could be high average, and because of the high average, maybe we're talking a 310, 360 on, you know, batting average on base as his ceiling. A guy who gets on base a little bit and hits at a high average, maybe hits 10 to 15 homers, hits 20 to 30 doubles, steals a couple bases, but not a ton. So, yeah, I think this is a really valuable guy. He's not going to be a superstar in the infield. He's not Baez coming up. He doesn't have the unicorn label that Jason Parks gave Baez forever ago, but he's going to be probably a quality infielder. And I think he's going to turn 22 this year, and
yes,
the ETA on him is probably 2020 to be like really safe, but there are a lot of people I don't think would be totally surprised if he made it to the big leagues by the end of the summer.
Right. Yeah. Horner's a fun kid. I got a chance to talk to him one of the games I was covering at Wrigley last year. Surprisingly, he was just in the Cubs dugout and none of us recognized him until Bruce Levine went over and talked to him, because Bruce knows everything.
Bruce does know everything. Yeah.
So, of course, Bruce jumped on him first, but we were able to talk to him. It was right after the injury was announced and he was done for the year. And interesting guy to talk to. He has a really great outlook, even for a guy that had just been told, like, you know, 6 hours ago his season was over. He was really excited to be Wrigley. He had a great personality, a good fit. He seemed to be a good guy in the clubhouse. I know Rizzo was talking about how he was like separating the first round picks from the non first round picks and said, like, these are your real friends or something like that. Cause he's Anthony Rizzo and he's hilarious. But so it'll be fun to see where this guy goes. But I think the head scratching that happened when he was drafted obviously isn't as prevalent as it was once before. Another quick note here, Yu Darvish apparently expected to have no limitations in spring training this year. That's awesome news. We kind of expected that, but the Cubs hadn't come out and necessarily directly answered that question. They went ahead and did that, I think it was 2 days ago, officially acknowledged that he will be healthy and should be able to go 100% spring training. So that's awesome news.
That's very good news.
Other news as well, the Cubs apparently worked out Drew Storen. Most notably, just recently pitched for the Reds, but was on the Nationals for a couple of years. He's a guy recovering from Tommy John. The Cubs are kind of just taking flyers out on all these injured players and seeing if they're pieces that could come back, just because right now the Cubs are in a position where they might need some pitching down the road. They're not quite sure. And having some lottery cards stashed away, you never know what's going to happen. So don't hate the idea.
Yeah, at this point, that's how they're piecing together their bullpen, right? Well, a lot of minor league deals.
Right. And that's honestly, I mean, if you're cap strapped, it's not the worst thing you can do. We talked about this in a previous podcast, if you'd like to hear more about it. But other MLB news, the Rockies and Nolan Arenado agreed to a record arbitration extension of 1 year worth $26 million. I think that's a couple shy of where Arenado wanted to land. Didn't he come in with like 30 or 34 or something?
I don't remember what he came in with, but that's I did see that MLB Trade Rumors prediction was $26.1 million, so they were $100,000 off, which is kind of impressive.
Gosh, can never get it right, those guys. Just kidding. That's awesome. As well, Shohei Ohtani, the sensation from last year, progressing well in his Tommy John rehab, but doesn't sound like he's expected to be ready for opening day. But they were very clear to say opening day. So it sounds like he might be back the first month of baseball. So that'd be great.
Yeah, a very quick recovery, right?
Like, it'd be Tommy. Insane. When did he
have Tommy John?
He had Tommy John, I think, at the end of the season because he was still hitting. They shut him down for pitching, but he was still the Angels DH for like the entire season.
I would assume that. That he would probably miss at least most of the season as a pitcher.
That's kind of what I was thinking. They were saying that he would progress week by week. So they're being super misleading with some of the information they've let out. They're saying he's going to progress each week doing something that relates to either hitting or pitching. They don't want to throw too much at him to overwhelm him. So like if he's working on his swing 1 week, they might not move him back off the mound or move him to the mound quite yet, or you know, push him back further for throwing for another week. So to me, like you were saying, this seems like it's going to be a bit.
Do you think what they meant was, or what the intention was, he's not going to be ready as a hitter for opening day because of the surgery, but you know, maybe a few weeks or a month later, he'll be back hitting on the at the plate. That seems to make more sense.
That's what I assume they were assuming in this article. It was written by MLB.com. So like obviously they know what they're talking about, but I would assume, because I mean for like hitting the shoulder, it's important, or the elbow is important, but obviously it's the throwing that adds the torque and the issues with that. So I'm assuming they expect him to be back as a DH. They might not expect him to be back throwing or pitching until probably, I would assume, maybe next year or this year.
And he's a left-handed batter and a right-handed thrower. So the elbow would be exposed as a hitter, so it's even more dangerous. It's the front elbow.
That's a good point. Yeah, so I don't know. The MLB could just be being optimistic because there is no news, but who knows? Wade Miley and the Astros agreed to a one-year deal worth $4.5 million. I think there is some type of added incentives to the contract that could bump him up to $5
million. Wade Miley had some ugly peripherals compared to what he did on the mound last year, but for that kind of money, I'm a big fan of that for the Astros. It makes me, like, obviously Cole Hamels is a better pitcher, but if you could have Wade Miley for $5 million plus $15 million to spend on other free agents, would you make that swap? Maybe, yeah. Like, it makes me not love the Cole Hamels deal so much.
It's a bummer that we're paying him so much.
Because you have... You know, Darvish coming back, and you have Lester and Quintana hopefully rebounds, and Hendricks is great. So Hamels is more of a luxury, in my opinion. So if you had Wade Miley as your number five and then Montgomery and hopefully a rebounding Tyler Chatwood behind that, like I would have been okay with that and spend the $15 million, you know, somewhere else. And maybe if you dump Tyler Chatwood in a deal, then you've got, you know, almost $30 million to play with. You could go out and sign a guy like, I don't know, Bryce Harper.
Sounds like Bryce Harper money to me.
Yeah. All hypothetical.
If only. God, if they just listen to us, Ryan, we know what we're talking about.
As we said on the last podcast, we are never wrong.
We're always right, except for when we're wrong. Marlins are in apparently the final stage of dealing their catcher, JT Realmuto. Sounds like Padres are probably the favorites to get him, but there's a couple teams involved. It sounds like that's going to finally wrap up. Who cares? It's kind of how I feel. Just get the stupid deal done. And then the Marlins also, a picture was shared online today of their new hats. Obviously, they have a new logo and they've gone through their third rebranding in like five, 6 years, it seems like. So new hats, they look kind of cool. Very Miami colored, but they're black with the M's logo, as well as they brought back that Marlin fish logo, which I think everyone liked. So the logos are back. Not a huge fan of the colors. So I don't know if you've seen those, Ryan.
I haven't, but I will check them out.
Yeah, it's it kind of looks like a pinata exploded on a hat. But, you know, cool. Honestly, very Miami. If they're trying to involve the culture in the city and get these people to care about the Marlins and their teams, it's a cool way to do it. So. Sure. All right. Well, that'll about do it here for Locked On Cubs. If you guys are not following us on Twitter, make sure you do so. Our handle is at Locked On Cubs. I am Sean R. Sears on Twitter. Ryan is Ryan Q. Davis. You can find all of Ryan's work on Forbes, Bet Chicago, some athletics, some NBC Sports, Cloud City Chronicle for any nerders. Star Wars particularly, if you could pick that up from the name. And then I'm writing for NBC Sports Chicago and I'm fan-sided as well, so you can check my work there throughout the season. But without further ado, that is Locked On Cubs. You guys enjoy the rest of the week. More exciting things coming. We teased it in the last show. I think we can tease it again. I know we're working on something for what we're kind of planning on debuting here in the next couple weeks today, so we're excited about it. But anything you want to throw around before we jump off for the
day? Nope, that's good. That's good with me.
All right. Well, you guys enjoy the rest of your week, and hopefully it sounds like it's going to be warmer in Chicago. If you're in a warm place already, I hate you. Not really. I just like being able to feel my fingers and toes in my home. But you guys enjoy the rest of your weekend, and go Cubs.